All right. Good evening. Welcome. I'm signing. Is that recording? Excellent. Yeah. If you're new to Dharma Rain, or if this is the first time you've been in this building, I want to give an extra welcome and a happy new year. And I hope you're finding your way here. And if you have questions, please feel free to ask folks who are wearing a raksu, one of these. Usually by the time somebody has a raksu, they've got some idea of what's going on. We also have a greeter in the doorway who can also help orient you to places. My name is Joshin. I'll spell that for you for those who are unfamiliar. J-Y-O-S-H-I-N, Joshin. I am one of the teachers here and one of the ordained priests, and I will be leading this class series on the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And these precepts are spoken of as the moral and ethical guidelines, which are foundational for Zen Buddhism, especially as we practice here in this temple. A lot of the oomph of this precept class series sort of builds from today, which is sort of an introduction to the precepts, through the next several weeks of classes, talking about them, investigating them, practicing with them, inviting them into our lives. And then in mid-February, we will have a week-long meditation retreat. And the schedule's actually up in the dining room if you're curious. And this week-long meditation retreat will culminate in a Jukai ceremony where people formally take the precepts if they wish. This is optional. And by doing so, they tend to, sometimes we talk about it as like a Buddhist conversion ceremony, but that feels a little weird to me. It's more like if people feel like they want to publicly say that they're taking the precepts as a guideline for how they wish to live their lives, or at least how they currently wish to live their lives, then this is something that they can do. But that's sort of jumping ahead to like the end of this class series. So for today, I just want to give a brief introduction to these precepts. And you should have been handed a piece of paper on your way into the Zendo that just has a very basic outline of what we're going to be looking at over these next 6 weeks. So you can see there's a welcome and get settled. Make sure people know what we need to do. And the hope is that you'll come away from this class series with a familiarity of the precepts, with an understanding of how they might be useful for you in your life, and how the traditions here in this temple invite those precepts in or give you a framework with which to work with the precepts, and how those precepts are held and talked about here. What kind of language do we use when we talk about the precepts? Zen is very funny in that there's no like head high church, in that when you go to different temples, you might hear things phrased a little bit differently. Like each place has its own way of using language and metaphor to talk about these things that are foundational to our practice. And the classes will be organized. Sometimes I've taught these class series several times. Sometimes we organize them by looking at groups of precepts for each class. And one of the ways that I like to do this is every 3 years we do what's called a Dai Jukai, or a Great Jukai. And during Dai Jukai, this is not a Dai Jukai year, so just don't worry about that, but during a Dai Jukai, we have a series of five different ceremonies over those 7 days. And those five different ceremonies all touch on different parts of learning about and receiving the precepts. And so for this class series, I'm organizing these classes, based on loosely on the themes of those ceremonies. So we won't be doing all of those ceremonies this year. We'll be doing two or three of them. So if you look at the schedule and you see funny words like Ketchumiyaku and Jukai and Kyojukaimon, those are all ceremonies that are done during Daijukai. And so today, with our theme of Kyojukaimon, we're talking about the introduction and the structure of our 16 Bodhisattva precepts. Next week, we'll look at Sangha, which is contrition and refuge. These are important parts of taking precepts in Buddhism. The third week, we'll look at what might be referenced in a Ketchumiyaku ceremony, but looking at karma and karma and relationships, how our karma impacts how we work with the precepts, how we understand the precepts, and how they shape our lives. Then comes a class on recognition, recognizing Buddha everywhere, recognizing ourselves as Buddha and others as Buddha. February 1st, it says Jukai. That's not the ceremony day, but just looking at elements of the Jukai ceremony. What is it to take and receive the precepts? What is it to invite these in? What is the meaning we give to them and the importance that we put onto them? What does it mean to do that in relationship to community? And then the last class will be a little bit of a wrap-up, an opportunity for last questions that perhaps didn't get answered earlier on, or further discussion deepening into our investigation of the precepts. And then through each of these classes, we'll look at some of these precepts in more depth. That's where some of the interesting aspects of precept study comes up, when we look at these elements in depth and through the lens of our own lives and karma. And then February 13th through 19th is our Jukai Sesshin. And there's just a little note there that it is optional. For those who do want to take the precepts, you don't have to know right now if you want to take the precepts formally. But for those who do want to, you'll need to let me know, either in person or by email, and we'll set up a what we call a precepts interview. It's not a test or an exam, but I just want to talk with you and find out a little bit of why you're interested in taking the precepts and how you're working with this. And I think my contact information is on that page as well. Sound good so far? All right. So the service that we recited before Zazen was a recitation of the Kyojukaimon, the giving and receiving of the precepts. And during this time of precept study in this temple, we recite that service in the morning for our weekday service. So Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, Friday morning. I can't remember Saturday morning or not. No, not Saturday morning, but Wednesday, Thursday, Friday mornings. And then Wednesday evenings, we recite the same service. And we'll be doing this for 6 weeks. So it becomes like a lot of our recitation practices or our chanting practices. We do it again and again and again and again and again. It starts to seep into the body. And if you're practicing at home, one of the ways you can practice with this is to take 10 minutes out of your day and just read it through the way we recited it this evening. And the more you recite it without like getting caught in analyzing what the words are, the more it just starts to sink into your body. And you might find that you're going about your day at work and one of those phrases might pop into your head. Oh, what are those 10,000 things in 100 grasses? What in the world are they talking about? Oh, what is the inexplicable Dharma? What does that mean? And they'll just start to pop up. And that's normal. That's a common thing that happens when we start doing precept study. Another way to practice with the precepts is to do what we call a practice of recollection at the end of the day. And this is a time at the end of the day where you just draw the events of the day through the mind And notice any parts of contraction. Oh, my belly is getting tight, or ooh, my shoulders just like squished up to my ears. And start thinking, okay, there's something where a self has been caught. What precept might that relate to? And then start looking in the Kyoji Kaimon. What might that be? I wonder why I'm doing that. And just have some curiosity about your life and your precepts. So when we talk about the precepts, when we talk about jukai, giving and receiving precepts in this ceremony, we say that we give the precepts freely. And this is something that we do. You can come to Dharma Rain, you can do this precept study, you can take jukai, you can receive the precepts. And we love that. I love that. I love seeing people come and do this precept study because it's, one, it's near and dear to my heart. It's been very formative to my practice. And I love watching people engage with this. When people take jukai, we call them or we refer to them as Buddhists of the Ten Quarter. So these are Buddhists who have no, you're not making a commitment to this particular temple or a particular teacher here. You're just saying, hey, this is guiding my steps. These precepts are guiding my steps. So we give the precepts freely, and yet the precepts are important. We give them freely, but we don't take them lightly or carelessly. Dogen, one of our ancestors who we revere greatly, a 13th century monk from Japan, said, "To assume the form of the Buddha, to come into possession of the Buddha's precepts, to get what the Buddha received and used, these are not small matters." And so these precepts form the basis of our functional understanding of ethics and moral decision-making. And that functional part is important because these precepts, we can talk about them a lot and we can think about them a lot, but they can become sort of the groundwork of how we decide what action we're going to take. Less how we think about what action we're going to take, but how do we get through our day with integrity? How do we get through our day with a sense that we've spent our day sitting upright, of taking wholesome action? And so these precepts reflect an inner purity, an inner orientation that manifests in outward behavior. But it's not a system that's imposed from outside. So there's no external authority saying, you must do this, or to be a good Buddhist, you must do this. These precepts are offered as tools through which you can view your own life and your own actions, your own behavior. But it's you that are doing the work. There's not going to be any precept police running around going, you took an extra cookie. Like, there's a precept about that somewhere. Like, you might notice your own internal reaction, or you might notice your own internal reaction if you see somebody taking an extra cookie, or if you yourself end up with a handful of cookies. But that's just you reflecting on your behavior. And really, that's all we really have control over a lot of time is our own behavior, right? I can't control your behavior. Most of the time I can control my behavior. I've just spoken a lot about cookies, so there might be something there for me about cookies. These precepts come from, there's something in the introductory part of the Kyoji Kaimon that talks about living wisdom or living traditions. I can't remember the right wording for it. But the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, as we live them and work with them, are as living documents in a way. They're based, they have a long history coming out of the Buddha's time. He made a system that is called the Vinaya, the rules for his monastics, and those rules are still kept in the Theravadan traditions. Mahayana traditions, of which Zen is a part, have taken a slightly different route over the centuries in that the precepts as they were developed describe not just rules of how to conduct your life day to day, but what are these aspirations for enlightened action? So sometimes we can talk about the precepts as this is what enlightened action looks like. These are very open, idealistic, and yet practical precepts. Do not kill. That seems very, very practical. But when we start looking at it, what does that mean? In what situation does that apply? Are there any situations in which it doesn't apply? What happens if we do something? What happens if we kill something? Well, is an ant different than a person? So all of a sudden, all of these questions can come up, and it can get really easy to get caught in the head and caught in analysis, which is why we'll spend some time talking about these. But also, we'll spend some time talking about the ways to work with these precepts. So I mentioned that these precepts came out of an old Vinaya code, and then there was the development of precepts that came out of the Brahmanet Sutra, which lists 10 major and 48 minor precepts. And then there were ordinations where monastics took both the Vinaya precepts and the Brahmanet precepts. So they held both. And then there was a change in Japan where the precepts for ordination just became the Bodhisattva precepts. And so there, over the centuries, there is this progression and change in the Mahayana traditions leading up to today. So the precepts we take today are not like the precepts that were taken in 600 CE, but they have evolved from them. Does that make sense? So there's some aspect of like, ooh, this is something really old. And there's also like, this is something that I can use today. Like, modern world is not like 600 CE. We have some problems that are new and different, and some problems that are very old and common to everyone. These precepts, oftentimes when we talk about them, we can think of them as koans, or questions that we can look into that might not have a straightforward intellectual answer. So with that example of do not kill, cultivate and encourage life, we might hold that as a question. What is that? How does that look in my day? How does that look right now? Not killing might mean, you know, I don't see any little bugs in here, but if it was summer and there was a little ant, it might mean not squishing an ant. It also might mean, if someone is offering a story to tell, not interrupting them and not killing the spirit of what they're trying to articulate. So these can have a variety of levels. And how we understand or define or view a precept one day might be different another day. A different self has arisen. These precepts are taken, like I said earlier, during that ceremony of Jukai, when people become Buddhist. They're also taken again when people decide to take a teacher and make a commitment to this temple as a lay disciple. They're taken again when someone decides to ordain as a monastic. They're taken again at funerals. So we take them again and again and again throughout our lives. And sometimes we'll have ceremonies where we just recite these precepts. So they're important, and it's not a one and done. And at the same time, there is something important and lovely about taking them the first time. And if you're coming to the class series and you're curious about the precepts, and you're not certain if this is for you this year, don't worry about it. I think I sat through these precepts classes about 3 times before I decided that, yeah, this was something I wanted to do. I had to do my own discernment about that, and I think each of you who are here to learn about the precepts will also be doing your own discernment about that. And it's okay to question that. It's okay to think, not this year, maybe next year, or maybe this year, and to go back and forth. You can go back and forth up until maybe the retreat starts. These precepts are not commandments. They're not given down as how things have to be, but they guide and shape our lives. And so what I'd like to do is, since I've been talking for a little bit, is just have you turn and make perhaps groups of 3 or 4. And I'm going to give you a few minutes in small groups, and I'm going to have you take turns speaking to your small groups on 2 different questions or 2 different points. The first one, is it easier if you turn and make your small groups first before I say it, or is it easier to say it now? How about if I say it now and you make your small groups and I'll repeat it? Okay. So the first one is just to reflect on your history with ethics and morality and what currently guides your decision making in your life. And then the second one is, even if this is your first reading of the precepts, one of them may catch your eye. So if one is catching your eye or caught your eye as we were reciting it, just bring this up to your small group and perhaps say what it was that caught your attention. And you'll have time to look at your papers and read through those precepts. And then we'll come back. We'll have a few responses from a couple of people, not everybody. And then we'll just go on with the lecture, okay? All right, so make your small groups and I'll give you your prompts again. How was that? Seems like we had a lot of lively groups. Sanin, do you have the hand mic? All right, are you ready to do a little bit of running? Or walking briskly? I'm wondering if anyone would like to speak to, let's start with the first discussion point. Like, what have you used up until now, or even continuing through now, to decide how to make decisions? What is your framework or your touchstone when it comes to navigating decision-making in your life, relating to others in your life? Is anyone willing to share? And I'm usually not here on Wednesday, so I have a lot of names to learn. So if you'd say your name too, that would be helpful.
My name is Phil. And for me, it was a combination of intuition and knowledge. I'm a small child, I knew what was right and what was wrong. But, you know, a lot of it was because I was what I was taught. So it's a combination of the two, knowledge and intuition.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Others?
My name is Travis. What he was saying about what feels right, like you can, when you steal the extra cookie, you know right away that you shouldn't have taken the cookie. But it takes a long time to learn that intuition. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of looked at it when I'm judging whether or not an action is right or wrong. Like, what if everyone did it right now? Would that be positive or negative? If everybody steals a cookie, clearly wrong. If everybody gave a cookie, that would be good. Mm-hmm. But, and I think all of the precepts fit that very well. Like if the whole world followed all the precepts, it would be a pretty positive thing. So I think if everybody else does it, is that good or bad? Is kind of how I've always judged my own action.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Others? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sky. But in figuring out like right from wrong, I've always thought of it more as like beneficial versus detrimental, mm-hmm. and kind of just cause and effect, like thinking through like, if I take this action, what will happen? Who will be harmed? Who will be helped? And also because sometimes that's not always so clear cut, just kind of having to figure out how to make the highest decision and mitigating maybe sometimes the negative effects that certain actions will have.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah.
My name's Jay, and I think for me in the past, this doesn't cover everything, but I put an emphasis on trying to figure out whether I'm doing it sincerely. So if I'm not being sincere, even if I did the right thing, it's probably wrong. You know, mm-hmm. that I don't think it covers everything on the other end, but.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you. So a lot from this side of the room. Is there anybody on this side of the room that wants to? Not a lot. There was only four, but.
Hi, I'm Amy. We talked about how growing up, how your families can influence your ethics, and we mm-hmm. had different family experiences. I shared candidly that my family experience was to go to A&W Root Beer, which is a drive-in place, and everybody took a mug home because that was what we did. And I had to unlearn learn that wasn't normal. So the ethics training for me was, I guess, unusual. Mm-hmm. That's why probably the precept that stood out to me most was, don't take what's not yours. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you want to talk about your family experience?
Well, I was raised in a Christian church, so I definitely got some ethics from that, and then that was less meaningful to me when I became an adult. And so it was mostly like my friend group, and like I had a close friend group. So it's like, what was pro-social and what was not pro-social? What helped me to have close friends and what didn't, I think, formed the basis of a lot of my decision. But like I missed having more of a moral and ethical framework to guide my life. So I'm like grateful for discovering Buddhism in the later years of my life.
Thank you, both of you. Yeah, these are all lovely responses. We are all living in a culture that has multiple levels of guidelines for ethics and decision making. We have legal codes under which we live, supposedly. We have various philosophers who have put forth frameworks of what is good or right or wholesome. We have a variety of religious traditions that teach what is skillful. We have our families, we have our friend groups, we have our own internal narratives and our own response to praise and blame, or shame or pride, which often influence how we behave in the world. So there's all these various levels, and they're all acting on us more or less, whether or not we're aware of it. And here we have the precepts, which are also another framework. But hopefully they're a framework that is accessible and also allows you to look more deeply into who you are and how you relate to the world, how you relate to those who are close to you, how you relate to others, how you relate to systems, how you relate to yourself. We have a precept of do not praise self and blame others. And I've worked with a lot of people where it's really important to reverse the wording in that precept and say, do not praise others and blame yourself, because there are those of us who can be very, very critical, self-critical, to the point that it causes harm. And so it's important to shift that the other way and look at not so much, you know, what I'm doing versus what that person is doing, but what is this balance of praise and blame? Where is it landing? How am I working with this? Where do I contract around receiving praise or receiving blame? The room just got quiet when I said receiving praise. Interesting. So what about precepts that caught people's attention? Yes, there's a hand over here.
The one that says, do not indulge anger.
I'm wondering on like how the tense of indulge anger, the extent of what that means. Because like to feel anger, I think, is healthy, but to let go of it is probably better. Mm-hmm. But to like indulge in it, mm-hmm. is that more of like using that to like be the driving force of your life? Or is that like something that's like deeper that I'm not understanding?
I think that's worthy of contemplation. And as these classes go on, we'll look at those aspects of these, the wordings of these various precepts, and perhaps do this in small groups or in a big group and look at what does it mean to indulge anger? What might that look like for you versus you versus you? When might anger be helpful or unhelpful? Skillful or unskillful. But I think that's a good clause to look at and say, huh, what is that?
For me, it was tearing up a loofah first thing in the morning. I didn't feel like showering.
Thank you. Other folks, what precepts jumped out?
Hi, this is Alice. Criticize nothing, accept everything. It's always stand out to me. What is a work, personal life? I think it's just I have a hard time. Things don't show up as what I want. So I complain, I whine, and then just to talk about it, but it's, I have to remind myself, no, accept. I mean, it's not easy, and I keep working on it.
Thank you. I think that's an important one. We talk in Buddhism a lot about accepting. Accept, let go, accept, let go, accept, let go. How? Right? It's easy to say, harder to do.
It is. Absolutely, yep.
And that's some of why we talk about practicing with the precepts. We're not just reading them, but we're looking at our lives through these lenses. Why are we doing the things that we do? Are they effective? What impact does it have on ourselves and those around us? This becomes practice.
Yeah, I think these sentences is at the end, but I feel like it relates to all the prior precept, all the 10 or the 16 one. Mm-hmm. It's kind of they're all interrelated, mm-hmm. but at the end it's like, okay, just accept everything.
Yeah. Thank you. Any thoughts over here? Over here? Got a couple.
This is Sage. The one that's been standing out to me today is do not become intoxicated, polish clarity, dispel delusion. It's one of them that I've skipped over mostly because I just didn't really have, like I see the word intoxicated, I'm like, oh yeah, drinking, drugs. I've never been the type to do that. Not like hardline, but like it's just not been an interesting thing to me. So I'm like, okay, I got that precept, whatever. But then when we're like saying out loud and like reading through it, it's so much deeper than that. Mm-hmm. Like when you're reading the paragraph under it, it's like not harboring delusions is the precept of not becoming intoxicated. I harbor a lot of delusions all the time. So maybe I shouldn't skip over that one.
Yeah. How often do we get intoxicated by our own views? Our own language, our own way we use words and ideas and daydream. Yeah. How often do we escape into a book and devour that new release? Lots of ways to become intoxicated.
For sure.
Hey, quick question. How long does this class last?
8:50? 15 more minutes.
15 more minutes. Okay. All right. And Sky, did you want to say something? Yeah. Well, this will be the last one, and then we'll go on.
Yeah, just that the one that popped out to me was do good for others, embrace all things and conditions. And I think it's really, I find it ironic because it's like the second half of that almost kind of like contradicts that first part. It says do good, but then embrace all things and conditions. And so I don't know. It just like, it made me feel warm inside. Mm-hmm. because it kind of follows that whole like feeling of what we discussed too about like our morality and how I felt about beneficial versus detrimental, but then also like it's loving or maybe good to also like embrace all things and conditions. So that popped out to me.
Nice. Thank you. This is great. This is our first little touching on precepts that are impacting us or that are, have caught our eye, that have caught our attention. And I think with each class, I'll talk a little bit about the theme for the class, whether it's Sangha or contrition. That doesn't help me, Ryotan. For those who will be listening to the recording later, I was brought a clock. I still don't know what time the class ends. I don't know what time Vespers is. But I know what time it is right now. So briefly, I'm just going to cover the sections in the Kyoji Kaimon. And then for next week, we'll talk about contrition and refuge, but then we'll also continue to keep going a little bit deeper into some of these precepts that are popping up in your life or catching your attention or are becoming meaningful to you or impacting your life. So hopefully you all have a little, either a little booklet of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts or you have a chant book in front of you. These all have the same sections in them. So this starts off with just this little giving and receiving, the teaching of the precepts. It's this lovely orientation to the Kyoji Kaimon, to the precepts. It gives us a touchstone to where these come from, or at least the narrative, the story of where these come from. This just starts off, the great precepts of the Buddhas are kept carefully by the Buddhas. Buddhas give them to Buddhas, Dharma ancestors give them to Dharma ancestors. We're talking about lineage, we're talking about Sangha, we're talking about community. The transmission of the precepts is beyond the three existences of past, present, and future. Enlightenment ranges from time eternal and is even now. It's possible. It's here. Shakyamuni, the Buddha of this world, transmitted the precepts to Makakasho, and he transmitted them to Ananda. Thus, they've been transmitted down through the generations. This is the meaning of the transmission of living wisdom. And the next section talks about contrition, which will be the subject of our next class. And it has what we call the contrition verse in it. All my past and harmful karma, born from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. And we'll talk more about sort of what that means. After that comes a section on taking refuge. Fundamental to all schools of Buddhism is this aspect of taking refuge. Taking refuge in Buddha, taking refuge in Dharma, taking refuge in Sangha. We'll talk about that. And then in the Kyoji Kaimon, after the refuges are the three pure precepts. Cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Stop. Do something good. Do something skillful. And allow it to expand outwards. And then following the three pure precepts, we have what we call the 10 grave precepts. And these are the ones that are a little formulaic. Do not do this instead, or do not do this, do that. Do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. Do not steal, honor the gift not yet giving. There's a prohibitory aspect to this precepts, and there's a confirmation. There's a window of growth, of flourishing, of thriving. When this precept is kept, this is what it looks like. And with the 10 grave precepts, there are often, in all of them have like two little short phrases after each of them. The first phrase, the first little paragraph, is attributed to Bodhidharma, so we might call it the Bodhidharma phrase. And that tends to be very sort of abstract or aspirational. The second phrase is attributed to Dogen, our 13th century Japanese ancestor. And so we might talk about the Bodhidharma phrase or the Dogen phrase. And these are just little bits of commentary that were added that help us remember, that give us a clue of how to work with these precepts or places where we might get caught, things to look out for. So we go through all of these 10 grave precepts, and those Bodhidharma phrases all start off in the realm of, and there's some sort of qualifier, Dharma, in the realm of the ungilded Dharma, in the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, in the realm of the intrinsically pure Dharma. All of these are just giving us little slivers of enlightenment, little slivers of a way to orient towards something that is so vast and bigger than ourselves. Qualities of what skillfulness looks like. And those 10 grave precepts end with respect the Buddha, unfold the Dharma, nourish the Sangha. And then there follows a beautiful paragraph. Within these precepts dwell the Buddhas, enfolding all things within their unparalleled wisdom. There's no distinction between subject and object for any who dwell herein. All things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks, stones, become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom. It's so sweet. Probably mysterious too, but sweet. And with that, I will say we are at 8:51, is that the right time to stop and do Vespers? All right, we're going to stop and do Vespers. Next class is next Wednesday. We'll be talking about contrition and refuge. If you already know you're interested in taking the precepts, let me know. I'll set up a time to meet with you. If you're still discerning, that's great. If you've already